Hey, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Today we want to talk about the Heroes Bill and the bailouts that came before it. Okay, the Heroes Bill was passed last week by the House, U.S. House of Representatives. We're going to look into some of the major provisions of that bill and ask ourselves, is it another mitigation bill? In other words, designed as the four previous bailout bills, including the biggest CARES Act, really designed to put a floor under the collapse. How successful have those bills, including CARES, in putting a floor under the collapse? And is the HEROES, fifth in that series, a mitigation bill as well, or a stimulus bill? Look, the U.S. economy has crashed, no doubt about it. There are 40 million people receiving unemployment benefits. 40 million, yes. As we've discussed in previous shows here, forget about the phony numbers coming out, 14.7% unemployment. 40 million just receiving benefits is already 26-27%. As a Morgan Stanley Bank representative recently said, I think it was yesterday, he said, yes, 40 million receiving benefits. And that means there's people in the pipeline who are jobless who haven't received benefits yet. Still, they admit that, 40 million. And that's not counting the 5 to 6 million more people in the last 2 months that dropped out of the labor force, dropped out. Now, the funny way the U.S. calculates unemployment, if you drop out of the labor force, you don't get calculated. You don't get calculated in the unemployment rate. Well, we talked about that. Listen to some previous shows for a further explanation, or go to my blog, jackrasmus.com, where I have this piece called Lowballing the Unemployed in the Era of the 2020 Great Recession. Explains that. So we got at least 45 million people who are unemployed. Now, that's a 28% unemployment rate. They're not all coming back, folks. A lot of these small businesses aren't even going to open up. And those that do open up are going to be running on a partial basis and with their close margins, profit margins, that they run on, particularly in service industries, restaurants, and so forth, they're not going to survive running on a partial basis. They're going to start falling like flies by the end of the year, too. And that means even fewer jobs coming back. What we're going to see here is a partial recovery as some come back. I wouldn't call it a recovery. It's kind of a flattening out of the crisis. You know, we will have dropped 40, 30, 40, 50% in terms of economic activity, GDP. People are going to come back. Okay, we're not going to continue to drop 30% every month. That's almost impossible, no matter how serious. When you have that big of a collapse in the second quarter that we have now, 20, 30%, all the banks say it's going to be, you can't drop another 20, 30%. The percentage of the drop will decrease significantly. And you may even get a little increase, but an increase off the floor of a 50% first half of the year contraction. Oh, but you know the way the U.S. government calculates GDP and recessions? Once you stop continuing to fall further, oh, the recession is over. Yeah. Consider this. What? U.S. GDP fell 4.5% first quarter, supposed to fall somewhere between 20-30% here in the second quarter. You know, that's at least a third drop in 6 months in GDP. Okay, let's say it doesn't continue dropping and we get maybe a 1% increase. One of the 50% contraction occurs in the third quarter over the summer. Well, according to U.S. statistics and definitions, the recession is over. Yeah, we're still down 49%, but because we're not dropping anymore, the recession is over. That's the way the U.S. calculates and defines GDP, gross domestic product, the measure of the economy. Yeah, the recession is over. We're still 49% below where we were. You would think it makes sense to say, well, the recession's over when you got back to where you began, right? No, no, no. That's not the way they do it in the U.S. Plus, you got to watch out. You know, are they talking about a quarter-to-quarter decline, you know, from the second quarter to third quarter? Or are they comparing the third quarter to a year previous? You know, in Europe, it's quarter-to-quarter. In the U.S., they do both. So the percentage decline or rise may be compared to a year previous. These are all the games they play. You know, we've been talking about that. You know, it's not lying. It's just selective cherry-picking and defining and assumptions. Okay. So we got a serious situation, you know. Big contraction, of course, in retail sales. You got retail companies going belly up all over the place now. Retail is, collapsing except for online. You got industrial production down a record level. All the indicators are down, down, down. And they're not all coming back ASAP. No, they're coming back very slowly. And you got a lot of resistance. You know, it's supposed to open the schools in the fall. How the hell are you going to run the schools in the fall? What, are you going to put fewer kids in the classroom? Half of the kids in the classroom to keep a space between them? Yeah, try keeping six-year-olds separate in a classroom. First and second graders, kindergartners, right? That's going to be impossible. And if you do that, where do you get the extra facilities? Oh, well, all right, so maybe you just have half of the kids coming in the morning for a partial day and half in the afternoon, or maybe half come one day and half come the other day. You can do all that, but that means the kids are going to get less education out of it all. And that means that, well, what's going to happen if you're coming every other day to babysitters, right? Who's going to watch the kids? How can the folks go back to work? If they're not in school, well, what are they going to do? They're going to pay for babysitter? Well, there's not enough of them to go around, first of all, in that kind of situation. Secondly, who can afford it? You know, only upper middle class folks can afford nannies. What about the rest of the working class? So you can't have it where the kids go one day and not go the other day, because the whole idea, or one of the main ideas of getting kids back to school, is so mom and dad can go back to work. Well, they can't go back to work on days off for the kids. So that's no solution. Are you going to do video conferencing with six-year-olds? Good luck. You know, who's going to stand there and make sure they do the lessons? You know, they just don't have the attention at that age to sit in front of a laptop for hours on end. And what about busing? You know, the kids got to go to school. Many places, they're still bused to school. Well, that's pretty darn crowded. How are you going to keep, you know, K through six kids on a bus separate? Good luck. All right. So, you know, there's a lot of problems and why you won't have a real back to work and a recovery, plus the very strong likelihood of a second wave. In fact, you know, Donald Trump, speaking at a Ford plant, I believe it was yesterday, reportedly said, well, it's a second wave is likely. But then he said, there's no way we're going to shut down again. In other words, go get sick. You know, the crisis in front of workers in the food packing and meat packing will be true for everybody. You know, Trump is forcing them back to work. Yeah, if you don't go back to work and stand elbow to elbow, you know, with your coworkers there, which is a very contagious environment, and it's already been proven to be so. We've got hundreds and thousands of in one plant infected if you don't go back, Trump said, well, you know what? No unemployment benefits for you. So, you know, either go broke, starve, or go to work and get sick. And he's even piloting programs in Arkansas and Texas where if you don't go back to work, you can be cited for not working. Yeah. What is this, 18th century England, where if you didn't work, you could be thrown in the workhouse? Or thrown into jail for not working? Well, wait a minute. I thought capitalism was liberty. You could go work or not work. It's your choice. Well, sounds like workers' rights are going away in all kinds of fashions. You know, and we'll talk about this a little bit later. You know, what Trump wants to do is to excuse corporations of all liabilities if they don't provide a safe and healthy workplace. In other words, if they don't provide the PPE equipment, if they don't provide the sanitation and so forth, right? And people get sick, you can't sue them. In other words, that's the end of occupational safety and health. Oh, Trump likes that. He wants to deregulate that. That's one of his big deregulation objectives and businesses as well. Get rid of OSHA. Well, they're going to use this to get rid of OSHA, job safety and health. Okay. We'll return, if we have time today, to look at it industry by industry, what's happening and what will happen. But I want to get back to the HEROES bill, the HEROES Act. Let's put it in context first before we talk about its provisions specifically. All right. When this crisis began, the immediate response was $8.3 billion passed by Congress for hospital reimbursement. That very quickly was seen to be totally inaccurate and inadequate, and they quickly passed the second bill for $100 billion. Again, for hospitals. But then by the middle of March, it was pretty clear that the CARES Act, the third in the series, had to be passed as well. And this is the big one, $2.2 trillion, the CARES Act, right? Legislated in March, did not really get signed off or passed until mid-April. Okay? That's what we call legislative lag in economics. Okay, so $2.2 trillion. This is the bill, the CARES Act, that provides this three tiers of loans and grants to businesses, the CARES Act, plus $500 billion to households in the form of these $1,200 per person check, right? And of which about $200 billion has been distributed, and the extra $600 for unemployment insurance for 4 months through July. That's the CARES Act. These three tiers, most of it, as I said, goes into the three tiers of loans and grants to businesses. Loans and grants. Okay, what are the three tiers? $500 billion goes to large businesses, you know, airlines and Boeing, and I think it's like $17 billion of that will go to defense companies and so forth, $500 billion. You know what? They've only taken up $40 billion of that. They're not taking the loans. Well, maybe they didn't need them. And I'll explain exactly why they did not need them. They were already flush with cash, and they didn't like the terms and conditions of getting those loans, so the big businesses haven't even taken those loans. In fact, Boeing, that's really hurting because airplanes that can't fly for over a year now, decided not to take the $60 billion loan from the government under this top tier for large corporations. We'll explain why. Then there's a middle tier for medium-sized businesses and a whole bunch of other creditors, you know, like companies that issue credit cards and auto loans and so forth. It's called the Main Street Program. That's another $600 billion. Medium-sized corporations, medium being more than 500 employees and $2 billion a year in annual revenue. That's medium size. You know what? Mainstream program hasn't even been implemented yet. No. So only $40 billion of the $500 billion has been taken up, you might say, and $600 billion has yet to flow out there. Yeah. Think of that. That's over $1 trillion that was passed in April, actually passed in March and approved in April. Do you hear any big companies complaining? Do you hear any medium-sized companies complaining? No. They didn't need it. Now, the small business bill is something different. That's the third tier of these loans, small businesses, meaning 500 workers or less and less than $2 million annual revenue. Okay, quite a few of those. There's millions of those companies. You know, these are your local service companies, right? Your restaurants and, you know, your entertainment and your retail and so forth, right? Personal services, dry cleaners, etc. Lots of those folks out there. Well, they initially appropriated $350 billion for them, but as it's been clear here, we've talked about it too, the banks gamed that, and some big companies, which had a lot of smaller subsidiaries or franchises, applied for that money, and the banks gave it first to them, and they gobbled up that $350 billion in loans in the first couple of weeks. So they had to pass a supplement to that of another $320 billion. So $670 billion for a small business. A lot of it sucked out by big businesses, bigger businesses. Why? Because the banks loaned it to their favorite customers, and the bigger the customer, the better treatment they got. You see, that's the problem with the CARES Act. The CARES Act problem is that this is really money that flows from the Federal Reserve into the private banks that are the bottleneck and the spigot, and they loan the money out to businesses. And of course, they skim their fees off the top. And the banks have used the opportunity of being the bottleneck to put pressure on Congress to deregulate them even further. Yeah, they're not talking about that. Okay, so we've got $500 billion big companies not being taken up, $600 billion medium-sized and other credit companies. And I believe there's $150 billion in possible support for the municipal bond industry that supports state and local governments. In other words, if there's shortfall, state and local governments, they can go borrow and get more in debt. That's in there too, in the Main Street program. And then there's the $670 billion PPE, it's called Payroll Protection Plan, small businesses. Now, the small businesses are a combination of grants and loans. If you maintain your employment, your number of employees here with the loan turns into a grant, free money. But, you know, there's a problem here with that. They talk about if you maintain your employment level. But what if they don't? What if they just take the loans, regardless of the size of the company, take the loans and they don't keep the employees? Well, technically, they're not supposed to get the loan. But you know what? There is no system in place to determine if a company that got the loan is really maintaining its workforce, or at least part of the workforce. You see, if companies say, well, before this act was passed, I was going to lay off so many workers anyway, so I can lay them off now even after I get this loan because this was planned before. Well, how the hell do you know they planned before? You got to just take their word for it. In other words, there are all kind of ways to game this system. It's going to turn into grants, almost for sure, all of it. Right? And in the meantime, workers are still getting laid off. Hmm? Well, there's other problems with the system. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. In other words, we really don't have the stimulus going on here. And this was wasn't a stimulus bill anyway. Even Pelosi and Congress talked about it as a mitigation bill. In other words, to put a floor under the worst of the collapse that was going on, not to stimulate the economy, to prevent it, to slow down and prevent it not going so deep so fast in contraction. That's what it was about. These four provisions. So, you know, the HEROES Act that we'll talk about a little bit more detailed shortly is another $3 trillion on top of the, what, 2.5 trillion in these previous acts. Okay, so 2.7 trillion plus another 3 trillion. Well, is the 3 trillion a further mitigation or an actual stimulus? That's an important question. Because it's only the stimulus that's going to generate economic recovery. You see, mitigation just slows down and minimizes, offsets a little bit of the contraction. The contraction continues. But everyone realized and said at the time when the CARES Act was passed that this was only a mitigation, good for 8 weeks. That's all, 8 weeks. And it's pretty clear now, even with the PPE, small business, that they need more time for businesses to actually process the loans and so forth. They were supposed to take up the loans, you know, within 8 weeks, but now they'll soon pass probably in the next week, an extension of that, you'll be able, if a small business, you'll be able to, even when the deadline expires per the CARES Act, you still will be able to extend that and apply for some of that PPE. Okay. That's a general context. Now, Trump and McConnell and the Trumpublicans, because it's no longer a Republican Party, is Trump's party, is a Trumpublican party. Let's call it what it is. Their view is that, at least they're saying this, I don't know if they believe it, that, you know, this stimulus so far, the $2.7 trillion, CARES Act and others, that this stimulus, let's wait and see what its effect will be. Well, we may be waiting a long time to wait and see because, as I said, $600 billion is not even implemented yet and only $50 billion to $500 billion is taken up. Yeah, small business, $320 billion, but the $350 billion has been taken up and part of the $320 supplement, but not all of it, is taken up. So, you know, we really, in the form of loans, we have less than $500 billion in stimulus. $500 billion, that's all. And it's in the form of loans. Now, the problem with loans as a stimulus is this. You can provide, make available all the loans you want, but it doesn't mean that businesses are going to borrow, going to take up those loans and actually expand their businesses. That's the problem with monetary solutions and loans and low interest rates, which is supposed to stimulate loans. The money supply and low interest rates it's not the whole picture. It's not sufficient. You got to have money demand. You got to have businesses and households and so forth that want to borrow the money that's made available before it stimulates the economy. And there's always a lag in that, 6 to 9 month lag in monetary policy effects on the real economy. And the worse the contraction, the more cautious businesses and consumers are to borrow, because it's uncertain what the future is going to bring. Is there going to be another second wave? Is there going to be a deeper contraction? No one knows. And you know what? When you don't know in business, you sit tight. You don't expand. No one knows how many people are actually going to go back to work. No one knows how the household consumer is actually going to spend. Are they going to jump in there and spend everything? Well, I guess if you're unemployed, you know, and you can't make your rent, you may. But even with households, some of the money they're going to get is going to be hoarded for contingencies and uncertainties in the future, right down the road. They don't know. Or they're going to pay down some of their existing debt so that if they're unemployed again or longer, they have more cash in order to buy food and so forth, and they're paying less on interest, credit cards and banks and so forth. In other words, both businesses and consumers will hoard some of this money. They'll hoard it. And that means it will not stimulate the economy. Bank lending will slow down and contract, except for the money being provided immediately by the feds here in these three programs, right? The banks will not lend their own money as quickly. You know, you can lower interest rates, but if a bank does not want to lend it out, even if you want to borrow it because the interest rate is lower, the bank has all kind of ways of putting obstacles to actually lending you the money, all kind of preconditions and covenants, as they call them, and so forth, to prevent you from borrowing even at the lower rates. Already we're seeing bank lending, independent bank lending, slowing down in Europe. And it's going to slow down here. It slowed down to a trickle after the 2008-9 crash. There was no bank lending. Lending continued to contract for years after that. Either the banks did not want to lend or people did not really want to borrow, being the uncertainty of conditions, you see. So monetary policy, which is the primary policy of capitalism in the 21st century to, quote, stimulate the economy, because it means all the money's going to go through the banks first and get skimmed off the top, and then it'll get to businesses, and then businesses have to decide whether how much it gets to the households and, you know, through jobs and wage increases. Doesn't work. Monetary policy does not work very well. And it works extremely poorly when you have a deep contraction like we have now. It doesn't work. And it won't work now either. The composition of this, quote, bailout, it's not really a bailout. Well, it's a bailout. It's not a stimulus. Works against it as a stimulus. Works against it. Now, the only real fiscal spending we got going on now, of course, then is the $500 billion to households in the form of the checks and in the form of supplemental unemployment insurance, the $600. But Trump, McConnell, and Trump publicans, their view is that, this is all due to the virus. And it will be over in 4 months. Well, Trump said it'd be over by Easter in the beginning, right? Well, reality proved him wrong once again. So now he's saying, in the third or fourth quarter, we will come back. And we're going to continue opening the economy regardless. He said that the Ford plant, you know, we're never going to shut down again. In other words, go to work, run the risk of getting sick and dying, bring it home to your family and kids, right? Or starve. because you're not going to get any unemployment that way. And we may even throw you in jail. Well, maybe not jail, but we'll fine you $1,000 maybe, right? To force you to go to work. Oh, this is capitalism with the velvet glove off. Yes, you see what the real values are here. But Trump believes that the economy will snap back. You know, exactly when, he keeps moving that goalpost, but it will snap back. We'll be right back where we were, in this robust economy before the crash began. It wasn't so robust. It was very weak and fragile, and that's why it's had such a impact, deep and fast contraction. Well, I talked about those reasons, in previous shows a couple times here, why the economy was so weak in 2019. I'm not going to go into it, but both consumption, business investment, exports, trade, the whole picture was very weak. Now, this idea of Trump and McConnell that the economy will snap back is based on a number of convenient assumptions that are false. First of all, it's based on the assumption that the virus will be short-term in its effect, which, of course, it's not going to be. In fact, the pandemics in 1918-1957 showed that the second wave was worse than the first, and the third finally began to mitigate. But the second wave is always worse. Oh, but he says we're going to go back to work no matter what. Right? Okay, so the assumption is the virus is short. The other assumption is that the economy was robust right before this. And as I said, that simply not true. Third assumption is that if the first two hold, the virus is short and the economy is robust, we're going to have a return to production and jobs and spending quickly, right back to where it was. Now, there's a whole number of reasons why that's not going to happen. So the assumptions on which this is based, this return to work and back to normal, this is all campaign spin. That's all this is, election campaign spin. And if Trump is good at anything, he's good at lying. Yep. Okay. There's also economic dynamics that have been set in motion independent of the virus effect here that are going to continue. As, in other words, companies drift towards default meaning unable to pay the principal and interest on their debt, and go bankrupt. And we see bankruptcies and defaults now spreading, right? We see them spreading in retail, in commercial property of all kinds, office buildings, not just hotels, not just retail, malls. Well, the biggest mall, the Mall of America up there in Minnesota, just defaulted. All these malls are, not all, but virtually all, are going to be in deep trouble, including smaller strip malls. They're going to go bankrupt. Right? Commercial property crisis is looming. And right behind it will be a residential housing crisis, as people are unable, after forbearance of 3 months, some of them, they're going to default too. By the end of the year, we're going to have a major commercial property, residential property crisis. And that's going to exacerbate the rest of the economy. Psychological expectations have been radically changed here. So much in economics depends on expectations by consumers and households and businesses. Expectations of the future. Is it going to be good? Is it robust? Well, if it's good and robust, they spend and expand. But if they think it's bad, they pull in their horns in both investment and consumption. And that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy of sorts and makes the economy even worse. So we've had this confidence shift, households and business of radical proportions, and that's going to continue. Whether or not the virus is mitigated or disappears or we get a vaccine, well, they may have a change if we get a vaccine, but there's no vaccine around the corner. There may not even be a vaccine. Come on, it's been decades since HIV and still no vaccine. Vaccines are kind of hit or miss. And we have deflation going on now. Prices are falling rapidly, not just for commodities, not just business prices, but prices for food and other goods as well. Gasoline prices and so forth. Now, the problem with deflation is that it really further undermines expectations by businesses and households. If you think prices are falling, are you going to jump in there and buy whatever it is that is falling in price? No, you're going to wait to see how much further it falls. Deflation is very dangerous for business investment and for consumption. If the prices of homes begin to decline, which they will before the end of the year, you think people are going to jump in who can afford to buy a home and buy one? No, they're going to say, well, let's wait a little longer. The price is going to come down even further. And that undermines demand and causes the prices to fall even further. You see, it becomes a vicious downward cycle. Now, the opposite occurs when you've got inflation. You know, if prices are rising real fast, you jump in there and buy because you think, well, they're going to be higher tomorrow. I better buy it today. You know, I was going to wait 6 months, but I'm going to buy it now because it's going to be higher 6 months from now. You know, well, that opposite works when prices are falling. So we've got defaults appearing. We've got deflation appearing. And we got a lack of confidence, fundamental in both households and businesses, occurring. And only a partial opening. These are the independent forces that have been set in motion regardless of what happens with the virus. Now, the virus is an overlay, exacerbates all this. And as I said before, the virus did not cause this economic collapse. It precipitated it. Big difference. Oh, yes, it becomes a factor once it precipitates it. It enters the whole equation, driving it everything down. But the equation was there for a significant softening of the economy even before the virus. So the virus is an add-on effect that exacerbates, becomes a force. But there are other forces involved driving this thing now. There were before the virus, and there are even more now, as I mentioned them, confidence levels and deflation and defaults, financial asset markets collapsing, which they will once again, no doubt. Well, they already are at certain levels. They've made a little comeback in the stock market and the oil and commodity markets and so forth. But this is what they call a bear market bounce, you know. It's fundamentally a bear market. It's going to contract, going to go down. And, oh, you know, but there are times when you have a little bit of a reverse recovery. Okay, so deflation and defaults are going to exacerbate this whole situation. You're not going to have a return to full employment. A lot of small businesses are going to go under right away already or over the course of the next 6-8 months. You know, when this began on my blog, I've been writing a series of articles about the viral economy, America's second great recession of 2020. And at the time, you can go back to my blog, jackrasmus.com, you know, in an article I wrote, their recovery proposals versus mine. And I said, what we're going to need is a true stimulus, not a mitigation, but a stimulus. And that has to be a fiscal spending stimulus, not a monetary policy strategy. As I said before, it doesn't work in a crisis like this. We need a direct government spending stimulus that would raise the government share of GDP from its current 20% before this to at least 40%. That's a war economy. 40% government spending GDP. That's what we did in 1942. You know, we went from about 15% or so GDP to 40% within 1 year. And we had price controls. Yes. And if businesses violated the price controls or other regulations and tried to profit from the war and so forth, they got thrown in jail. Yeah, we threw CEOs in jail in World War II for trying to game the system. Now they're untouchable. Well, they were untouchable during Obama and the Great Recession as well. Yeah, we need a war economy. Not based on loans to businesses, which mostly get hoarded and don't work, and not based on more business tax cuts either. You know, I haven't mentioned yet, but the media doesn't say anything about the CARES Act, this $2.7 trillion, doesn't say anything about that, providing massive business tax cuts on top of the $500 billion, $600 billion, $660 billion in loans. How much? Well, it just came out now. The estimate is, I think it was the Joint Tax Committee, estimated $650 billion in tax cuts that are already in the April CARES Act. And you know, in the HEROES Act provision, there's even more tax cuts coming. Well, tax cuts to business work kind of like low interest rates. In other words, you reduce business costs, right? By cutting some of their taxes. Or you lower their cost of credit by lowering interest rates. But in a crisis like this, neither stimulate investment and production and employment hiring. Neither the low interest rates, neither the lower taxes. They get hoarded. They get hoarded as well. They don't get into the economy. Our businesses take the tax cuts, but they don't expand. You know why? Because business investment is driven by expectations of profit gains, rates of return and profit gains, not by the cost of money or the cost of taxation. It's not the cost of investing. It's the possibility of making profits that drive investment. And if the possibility of making profits is not there, it doesn't matter how much you cut their cost. Oh, they'll take advantage of the lower cost, and they'll hoard the money and wait and wait and wait for a better situation. But they won't immediately go out and expand. And in a way, you know, doesn't make sense, does it? If people aren't buying your stuff, why are you going to expand? You can give me low interest rates. I'm not going to borrow and expand my business when I can't sell my inventories now. Oh, I'll take the tax cuts, but I'm not going to go out and expand production when no one is going to buy it. Yeah, so $650 billion of tax cuts on top of $429 billion in more loopholes Trump gave everybody last year. On top of his 2018, $4.5 trillion of tax cuts over 10 years. So, you know, $400 or $500 billion, another $400 billion, another $650 billion here, more coming into HEROES bill, all not going anywhere except in the pockets of the shareholders. Yeah. Okay. So don't forget, there's big tax cuts on top of the $500 billion, $600 billion, $660 billion. And also, there is all, you know, at least a dozen other Federal Reserve Bank, central bank programs of pushing money, free money, into businesses of all kinds. On top of all this, you know, the Fed is providing so far, I think, about $6 trillion of virtually free money to businesses to borrow. You know, what's different from 2008-09 first Great Recession is this. The Fed spent $4 to $5 trillion to bail out the banks. $4 to $5 trillion took the debt of the banks and private companies, auto companies, insurance companies, took that debt, put it on its own books, the Fed, Federal Reserve's own books, its own balance sheet. And it, you know, its balance sheet was $4.5 trillion. And that's the function of the Fed, you know, to take the debt and put it on its own balance sheet in the hope that, well, they don't have debt that they have to service and pay. Maybe they'll make some loans. Well, they bailed out the banks. But what's going on now is they are pre-bailing out the banks, pre-bailing out, even before the banks have all these losses due to the wave of defaults coming. Preemptively, the Federal Reserve has started bailing out the banks. Preemptively. This is a bailout, the first ever bailout of banks before they actually needed to be bailed out. First time in our history. And it's not only a bailing out of the banks so that they aren't going to get hit with these defaults. It's the Fed bailing out non-banks to help them avoid defaults. They're bailing out the whole capitalist system here with a flood of free money. The problem is all that free money ends up, there's so much of it, not in expanding real business investment, in other words, in plant and equipment and goods and services. It ends up going into financial asset markets that cause bubbles eventually in those markets. Or it ends up companies distributing it in the form of stock buybacks and dividend payouts, which in the 3 years under Trump totaled $3.4 trillion in buybacks and dividend payouts. $3.4 trillion in 3 years. And before that under Obama, almost $1 trillion a year on average as well. This is the conduit for the great inequality, you see, the buybacks and the dividends goes to shareholders, right through the corporation, right to the shareholders. And the taxes have been cut for decades now to allow them to keep more of it, the shareholders. Well, that's why you get income inequality, or one of the main reasons. Lack of real wage growth is the other. But that's even more the financialization of the economy and buybacks, you know, and dividend payouts. Okay, so what's wrong with the $2.7 trillion CARES Act? You know, first of all, big corporations gamed the small business. Big corporations and banks gamed the small business provisions. By the way, I just saw this past week some information that 230 of these ineligible bigger businesses that took money from the PPP program are refusing to pay it back. What's also wrong is there's no inspectors and oversight board that was called for in the act, but Trump hasn't implemented that at all. In fact, he's firing inspectors, generals everywhere. Okay. Third, all the money goes through the private banking system, which skims their fees off the top and uses it to lobby for deregulation and no liability. And the best customers got it first. Thirdly, you know, only $50 billion has been taken up so far, and the Main Street medium business has not even been implemented yet. Yeah. You know, Boeing is a good example. You know, Boeing was given $61 billion in the big business element here, but Boeing decided not to take it. Yeah. Instead, Boeing is borrowing from the financial markets, $30 billion, $40 billion, I don't know, something like that. Why? Because it prefers to lay off their employees. You know, if it took the money, technically, it couldn't lay people off because it was a payroll protection, right? Well, Boeing wants to shift its business from the unionized Seattle area to its non-union South Carolina area production. If it laid employees off, it could do that. If it had to keep paying for them in Seattle, well, then that would have been a problem. So it's chosen to take on more debt, because interest rates are so cheap, you see, than to take on loans from the government. You know, plus the loans from the government have provisions that, limits on executive pay and on dividends and so forth. They don't want the restrictions. So they're not taking these loans. Boeing's a good example. Big corporations are flush with cash going into this. They don't need the loans and the limitations on the use of the loans. That's why you only got $50 billion to $500 billion being taken up. Well, how did they get all this cash flush? Well, first of all, record windfall profits in the previous 2 years because of the Trump tax cuts. You know, in 2018 alone, Fortune 500 largest companies had a 27% profit increase. 22% of that 27% was windfall from the Trump tax cuts. Took it out of the government purse, the taxpayer's purse, and gave it to these guys. Windfall profits. So they're flush with the profits, the tax from tax cuts as well. All right, but that's not the only way they've got themselves flush with cash. They've been issuing corporate bonds. Corporate bonds. You know, I sell paper to investors and I get the cash and sitting on the cash. And they accelerated that in the first quarter of this year. You know, they knew in January this was coming. And they started issuing these corporate bonds in February and March. In March, they raised $231 billion in investment grade bonds. In April, over $300 billion, it looks like it's going to be, in investment grade bonds. I don't have the figures for January and February, but you know, probably like $1 trillion in extra corporate bond issues, cash. On top of that, and a tax windfall, they started drawing down their credit lines with banks. In other words, the banks say you got $2 million of credit line over the next 3 years. Okay, so they took the whole $2 million and put it in their slush funds. And then we have the $650 billion tax cuts in the CARES Act. Right? All ways of getting flush with cash, you see, made available by the government. And many of these big corporations are making money off of being shut down. Well, how do you do that? Well, they're voluntarily suspending dividends, so that saves them millions and billions, and their buybacks. We're not going to have the same $1 trillion a year of stock buybacks and dividend payouts. They're hoarding that. A lot of them aren't paying rent on some of their facilities that are closed. They have a reduction in utilities costs because of the shutdown, a big corporate tax cut, windfall coming, property taxes, production, so forth. Some of them reduce labor costs. Yeah, not everybody is getting paid the full amount. Even though they're paid, they might be paid from home. And like take the tech industry, you know, they did throughout Silicon Valley in California, provided lunches and dinners to everybody. You know, I'm talking about Googles and Apples and so forth. Well, nobody's there. So big savings for them. Business travel, big savings, recruiting of new employees, big savings. So a lot of them are making money through big cost savings, you see. Not all of them, but a lot of them. So, you know, the windfall profits, the corporate bond issues, the bank credit lines, the CARES Act, the shutdown and all this, they're flush with cash. Flush. Now, certain industry sectors in trouble, you know, don't have this scenario. You know, I'm talking about, you know, some of these industries, the travel industry and services and so forth, right? they need it, right? A lot of these small businesses have only 27 days average cash flow. They've run out of it already. That's why they're in the streets protesting. You see, those are small business people and radical writers who are out in the streets, right? Now, the Heroes Bill. Oh, gee, I didn't give myself enough time to go over the Heroes Bill. well, let me just quickly, right? $3 trillion more, $850 billion for state and local government to make up for their revenue shortfall. In some of these states, it's like 30, 40% revenue shortfall. Some states, like Texas, depend totally almost on sales tax, and it's just not there. So trying to help the state and local governments, a return to the supplemental checks, the $1,200 through next January, right? Now raised from, you know, the max of $3,400 for a family of four to $6,000 for a family of four. So if you got more than two kids, right? $100 billion rental assistance. The $600 supplemental unemployment benefit boosted through January 2021. $200 billion in hazard pay for first responders and healthcare workers, long overdue. Another $100 billion for hospitals. You know, $20 billion for government health agencies. Billions more for cost of testing and treating and vaccines and prescription drugs. A lot of this goes through money, more money for Medicare and Medicaid, right? Continue a provision that requires companies to continue health insurance, even though they lay people off through next January. $100 billion for testing and tracing. Tax reductions, $500 tax deduction for first responders, plus nearly $1 billion for child care for first responders. So a lot of measures that are direct government injections in this bill. But you know what? It's still a mitigation bill. It's still not a stimulus bill. But, well, we haven't had time to go into why Trump and McConnell are against it. We'll take that up next week.